Greetings off besties. We're back today with some more dispatches from other side of the news. That's the show that Something Offbeat host Mike Rogers has been hosting on air for decades. We also have a little preview for you of the next interview we'll be doing. But before we get to that, we have to fire up the flux capacitor and do some time traveling. Or maybe this time machine is more like the TARDIS from Doctor Who. That's in a phone booth, and all this takes is dialing a few numbers. Here, I'll let Mike explain.
If you're under a certain age, it's hard to fathom that there was once a time in this country when people who wanted to know the correct time didn't just glance at their phone, they'd pick up the phone and call. On a rotary dial phone more often than not, John Lockridge of Dallas says he remembers it well.
I grew up calling the time and temperature here in Dallas. Used to be operated by Republic Bank.
844-6611.
Or 844 any four more numbers.
And that 844, by the way?
It was spelled TI-4.
The TI, of course, standing for time. And that number is still in operation.
The current time, 11:36. A.M. and the temperature, 69 degrees.
Thanks to people like John, a communications engineer and a self-described devotee of those old time and temperature numbers, which actually go back almost 100 years, when it was a live person on the other end of the line.
People in the 1920s would dial up Western Union to get the time, the exact railroad time.
And then when Western Union gave it up,
people started calling the Naval Observatory in D.C., and they provided it time for a couple of years, but got so many calls they couldn't handle it, and the phone company decided to do it.
But now they're giving it up, too, which is where John comes in. He's buying up those old numbers and keeping them alive, or in some cases, bringing them back to life.
We try to get numbers that were a thing, you know, that people remember from their childhood whenever possible.
Like Meridian 71212 in New York City.
Meridian 7 was the most commonly dialed number in New York City for decades.
Daytime, nighttime, to get the right time, call Meridian 71212.
And over the years, the collection has grown. John's now operating time and temperature numbers in cities from coast to coast, 132 of them in Texas alone, and all the way up into Alaska.
We even got one inside the Arctic Circle at Prudhoe Bay.
They need to know what time it is, too.
Well, and it can get pretty cold, so we put the temperature on there as well.
But there are still many other cities that have lost their time number, and that's too bad.
You know, there's no need in just throwing away the past.
Or disconnecting it, as the case may be.
I'll be glad to give it a new home. I give home to orphan time numbers.
Now that we've all made it successfully back to the future, we've got one more other side of the news stop to make before we get to that preview I mentioned. This destination, the Selfie Museum in California, might seem like an obvious product of our time. But its roots go even further back than my MySpace photos, with extreme angles and even more extreme bangs.
10 years ago, it wasn't even a word, but now the selfie has its own museum. Out in L.A., of course.
My reaction at first was horrified, because the term selfie alone, you know, not only gives me pause, but just makes me want to kind of throw up. I hate that term. Just the word drives me nuts.
Tommy Haughton is the guy hired to put it all together, says he agreed to it on one condition, that this wouldn't just be a collection of pictures.
Is there a way into this that using that reaction where people are like, oh, really? Or a museum of what? But when they came in, they realized that we had a little bit more to offer.
In other words,
it's not just a museum of selfies. It's a museum about selfies.
Starting with the history of selfies, because this isn't a new phenomenon.
It is more or less what people have been doing for the past 40,000 years.
Going all the way back to cave paintings, then brushes and canvas, like Van Gogh. How many selfies did he paint?
Yeah, from Van Gogh, many of the Renaissance masters, all the way to classic modern painters. You have Norman Rockwell doing a picture of him doing a self-portrait.
And then, of course, into photography.
From the earliest advent of photography and daguerreotypes, which took forever to sit for, you have people taking photos of themselves.
And they have samples of all of that.
One of the pieces we have analyzes the fact that a lot of people, when they run marathons, as soon as they cross the finish line, they take a selfie. So we have photographs of people taking photos of themselves crossing the finish line.
If you'd look closely enough, you might just find a picture of Tommy himself in the selfie museum. Because why not?
I think it would be kind of silly not to have some kind of hidden stuff for people to look for.
Will there be any selfie sticks on display?
You better believe it.
Assembled into a giant throne.
You know, we're working on it now, but you can sit on it and take some interesting photos from it.
Of yourself, of course.
And next up, Something Offbeat is going to do an interview looking into college degrees related to psychedelics. Earlier this year, Odyssey station KCBS Radio in the Bay Area looked into one such program at the California Institute of Integral Studies with Professor Nick Walker.
Talk about why it is important to study psychedelics in an academic setting.
Yeah, great question. Well, we have, a lot of people interested in psychedelics, as you said, and people experimenting with psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. There's a real psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy renaissance, and people doing guided trips, increasingly places where psychedelics are legal or decriminalized, especially for therapeutic purposes, and a lot of very exciting psychedelic research in terms of its potential as a PTSD treatment, for instance. So there's a lot of work happening with psychedelics, and we think it's very important that people approach it in a scientific fashion and a well-informed fashion, in an ethically informed fashion, because, you know, when something like this, when there's a big boom in something like psychedelics, some exciting method of treatment and exploration and personal growth, it can be kind of a Wild West scenario with people experimenting wildly, and psychedelics are intense. So we're looking at how do people use them without harm? How do people do psychedelic research in a way that makes sense? How do they do therapy in a way that is informed by neuroscience and ethics? So, yeah, that's what we're about.
All right, Professor, you know, maybe we should pause here and have you define what a psychedelic is. There's different things. What are the most popular ones or the ones used most in research and medical applications?
Absolutely. Well, right now, a lot of the research has been focused on MDMA, and MDMA is it's interesting. It's a synthetic substance. It's been around for a few decades now, and it's known. Often people talk about it as, you know, inducing a very loving state, states of profound empathy. And MDMA has been very exciting in terms of reducing trauma, in terms of healing trauma. And so there's a lot of exciting research around MDMA-assisted psychotherapy as a treatment for PTSD, for instance. So that's been a big focus. And then psilocybin is very popular as well, you know, and it's decriminalized now in an increasing number of areas. And that, of course, is a natural, it's a mushroom that just grows naturally. And so, for some indigenous groups, it's part of their religious and spiritual traditions. So psilocybin is having a big resurgence right now as well. And people are looking at sort of a broader therapeutic purpose of self-exploration through psilocybin.
Stay tuned for our deeper dive into this topic. And thanks for listening to this Other Side of the News Dispatch episode of Something Offbeat. It was produced by me, I'm Lauren Berry, as well as our host Mike Rogers and KRLD 1080.